From the beating heart of Montana, this is Big Sky, Small World, Carroll College's student podcast.
Big Sky, Small World, I can unhide Montana.
What's happening, Helena? It's your host, Stella, and I've got a lot of events for you this week. Number one, you guys need to make sure you get out and vote. When this episode comes out on Tuesday, November 5th, it will be Election Day. So show out to your local polling places and get your ballots turned in. All right, first up on the agenda, we have not super recent news, but Carroll College has added a dance team to the list of activities. They've been a big part of making football games more entertaining for the viewers, and they also work together with the cheer team to get fans more excited. And today I have
Katie Miller,
Brooklyn Wilford,
to talk about the team and everything you need to know about it, pretty much. So my first question, I guess, is why did you guys join the dance team?
Well, I went to a cheer practice because one of my friends on cheer team wanted me to check it out. And the dance team was actually at the practice that I went to. And I did dance for a while back in high school and middle school, so I kind of have a little bit of background in it. And the coach actually talked to me after practice, and it just seemed like a better fit for me. So I went to one of the dance team practices and talked to the coach a little bit more, who I really like as well. So kind of just made sense for me. And I'm really enjoying it. Brooklyn?
I did not plan on joining the dance team, but me and Katie were hanging out and I was watching her do all the dances in the sidelines, and I did studio dance for a really long time, like almost all of high school and a lot of elementary and middle school. So I just started doing the dances with her, and it was really fun. And so then I talked to the coach and I was able to join the team. It's been super fun.
I was told I probably shouldn't join the team by Katie, actually. She's seen me dance, and it's not pretty, so.
I don't know if you make it, so.
How do you guys feel about the last home football game coming up? And are you guys, like, going to continue during basketball season? Or, I guess, how does that work?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's one game left, which is kind of sad, but if we do it next year, then we'll have a couple more. But, I don't know, football's pretty fun. It's, like, I don't know, it's cool to see the game from the field, but also just be able to, like, dance the whole time is really fun. So it's sad that it's the end, but we're doing all of basketball season two, so you'll see us on the court, which will be interesting, hopefully.
Yeah. We also do volleyball games, yeah. Which is a lot more chill, but
so hopefully basketball's like that, too. They're just shorter games. Football can be a little long, but it's still fun.
Is football the funnest game to dance at?
Probably just because there's, like, the biggest crowd, I'd say. What do you think?
I personally like the indoor games more just because football games can be a little bit overstimulating because it's usually either really hot or really cold.
It's going to be cold this weekend.
And the weather kind of is hard to dance in sometimes. Like one of the games, the wind was really bad.
I noticed that. The hair in the moss did it for me.
Yeah, that's one thing. We're not allowed to have our hair, like, up.
Yeah, it's always down. So we can do, like, hair flips and stuff. But sometimes it's a little inconvenient with the wind. But that's why I like being indoors, but I do like football games more for the crowd overall. Gotcha.
How can the community, like, come and support you guys, and what can they do just to benefit the team?
Well, we do some fundraisers every year. Like, I think we sold some shirts this year, and we might do some more fundraisers throughout the year, so that's a really good way to help get us maybe to nationals eventually. I don't know if we're going to do that this year, but maybe next year.
Is that to compete or to travel with other teams?
To compete. We'd compete in Florida, I think, and go to, like, Disney World and stuff like that too, but we'd get to compete against other NAIAs all across the
Gotcha. What's, like, dance competition like? Do you guys?
I mean, I have, like, some experience with, like, high school drill team competition, which is kind of similar to this, and then I know Brooklyn has studio competition experience, so a little different. But
yeah, well, NAIA is a little bit different.
So different.
A little bit different from every other dance competition, because we do something called a 30-30-30. So it's 30 seconds jazz, 30 seconds hip-hop, and 30 seconds palm all in one routine, which usually for every other
dance team, one type of dance.
Yeah, it's like a minute long of just jazz, and you would choose what you want to go compete in, like if you wanted to go compete in lyrical or hip-hop or jazz or whatever.
And you can do multiple, like, dances and just do, like, different styles, but for NAIA, they require the 30-30-30, so it's the first time any of us have ever done it on the team, so, and then all of the members of our team have, like, totally different background, like, Caitlin Wenzel, she's super ballerina, and then I know, like, Caitlin Fellows, she's tap background, and then you and Abby Brown are super studio, and then me and Chloe both have drill team practice, and then we have a couple other girls who have different backgrounds too, so we all are kind of learning what to do with this comp thing because it's different than what we've all done before, but I think it'll be fun. Yeah,
we'll see. The difference between drill and studio?
Well,
a lot.
There's a lot of differences. I feel like it's just like the skills you do, I feel like environment dynamic is super different. I don't know, like, specific things to explain it.
I think the style is just a little bit more different. Like, drill team is very,
like, palm.
About sharpness and palm, and it's very unified, whereas studio dance is a little bit more artsy, where you do a lot more contemporary, lyrical, and it's not always, like, completely in sync, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely more, like, creative, and then, like, drill is very, like, in sync. Things happen, like, for a purpose. Like, you go here to make this, like, look unified and symmetrical on both sides of the formations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my background. Mostly I did studio when I was super young, but Brooklyn's more full studio. Never done drill, but she's killing it. You have to learn a lot of different things. Like, drill team's really different to transition to from studio. So a lot of the girls have done that, and me and Chloe are, like, the only girls that have drill experience. And we're like, holy, like, they are picking it up really fast. So it's really impressive. I feel
like everyone's kind of meeting halfway, though, because even with drill, like, what we're doing is still different even from drill, I would say.
It's more jazzy, for sure.
Yeah, like, I feel like we're all kind of meeting halfway because we definitely incorporate some studio stuff that I think you didn't have a lot of background in, but I had more background in, but you have more background in palm, and we do some of that too. So I feel like everyone's kind of meeting halfway with, like, studio versus drill, if that's your background.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, like, anything about dance, so that was helpful. But I guess I'll ask, what's your guys' favorite memory so far?
There's been a lot of fun things. I would say meeting the team was one of my, like, favorite times, just because everyone was, like, super welcoming, and I felt really, like, excited to be there and, like, comfortable with everyone. And then, like, Faith, our coach, is, like, super awesome and helping me, like, prep for everything, because, like, she said, like, we do some studio, like, tricks type of thing. So I've had to, like, really go back and learn a lot of stuff that I haven't done since, like, 6th grade. So I've been working one-on-one with our coach a lot, and I think, like, just meeting everyone and working with our coach is probably, like, my favorite part. But I also like football games a lot, and the first game was, like, super fun. It kind of started off as rough because we didn't know what was happening, but I think by the end of it, it turned out really good. But yeah,
my favorite, I would say, I don't have, like, a specific favorite memory yet. I'm sure I'll probably have one by the time we do comp.
Because we haven't been on the team that long. We're, like, the new members, if you didn't know.
But I'm sure when we do comp and we're traveling, something
I think it'll be funny
will happen, and we'll probably have a lot more team bonding. Right now, we haven't really had a lot of time together team bonding-wise because we've been working really hard on just trying to get our comp routine done, and we've had a lot of medias with football, so we haven't really spent a lot of time just together as a team, but I'm sure that will change once competition season comes around. But overall, I think it's just been fun getting to know the team and hanging out at practice and being able to, like, let our goofy sides out a little bit.
I feel like we're all, like, really ourselves when we're at practice, and we get to just, like, make jokes and have fun, and it's like, we take it seriously, but it's also, like, we get to have fun at practice, so mm-hmm. I really like that. So, overall dynamic is good.
How do you guys balance school? Because I know you're nursing, and that's, like, the toughest thing to do on top of an extracurricular. So how have you been managing and making sure you still have time for yourself?
Well, you kind of just have to prioritize, like, if I have homework, you got to get your homework done in the time you have for homework, and then dance. You have, like, scheduled stuff, but then, like, practicing outside of dance, too. So I just try and, like, make a schedule for myself based off of, like, my work and school class schedules and clinicals and stuff, and then dance, and then I just kind of squeeze everything else in around that, and then usually weekends or Fridays, or if I don't have clinicals on Tuesdays or Thursdays, that's kind of when I do, like, stuff for me, like, I'll get my nails done or go work out or whatever. So I just try and, like, do things when I can, but it's chaotic.
To be honest, I like having something else to do, because last year I wasn't really doing anything, and I spent a lot of time studying, but I felt like it was really unproductive. Like, I would study and then I would lose motivation and go on my phone, and I would spend like 3 hours studying, but only 1 hour of it was like actually studying. Mm-hmm. But now that I have dance, it feels like when I make time to study, like, I actually get stuff done.
Yeah, because I have to, because
I don't have any more time, but it does feel a lot more productive, and it's nice, honestly, to have something outside of nursing, because when you're in nursing school, it can consume your whole life if you let it,
yeah,
and it's really so important to, like, find yourself outside of nursing and not lose yourself in it, or else you're going to get burnt out as a nurse, even as a nursing student. I know a lot of people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who have got really burnt out just because they don't do anything else.
Yeah, I feel like, honestly, dance is kind of my, like, that is kind of my thing to, like, do as, like, personal thing that I, like, want to do. Like, I like going to practice, and I like going to the hack to, like, practice my own thing and stuff like that. So, yeah.
That's good. I don't think I have any more questions. If you guys want to share anything else or...
Shout out, Faith. You're the best coach ever. But, yeah. I just say, like, the girls have been really welcoming to us. We're both, like, joined the team, like, last minute. We're both juniors, nursing students. So just, like, everyone being welcoming was really nice. And it's been a lot of fun. So if you want to join, let us know. We need people next year.
Oh, yeah.
We have a lot of seniors.
How many? Four?
Five. We probably are only going to have a couple people on the team next year. So join. If you have dance experience or not, maybe.
Unless you have the rhythm that I do, and then
unless you're like still a little,
you're
maybe
probably
no.
Not.
You can try. We can train you.
Well, thank you guys for coming and talking about it. I appreciate it.
Of course, thanks for having us.
This is fun.
Bye.
Next Special Olympics State Basketball Tournament is on November 7th and 8th. And if you are interested in volunteering or donating, visit somt.org. It's going to be really fun, so make sure to show out and support. All right, next we have a blood drive at the Red Cross Donor Center from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. That's going to be November 4th. If you are looking to donate blood and help the community, then I definitely recommend being there. Lastly, the Fall Art Walk is this coming week. It's going to be November 8th from 4 to 8 p.m. And you can take a stroll through downtown Helena and experience an evening filled with creativity, color, and local talent. Explore galleries, meet artists, enjoy live performances, and honestly, you'll just soak in the last bit of fall before it snows. So whether you are really into art or you're just looking for a fun evening, something different to do, the Fall Art Walk probably would be a good opportunity. That's all I have for you today, folks. So make sure to tune in next week so you know what's happening, Helena.
I'm Allie Olson.
And I'm Delaney Moxon.
And welcome back to Beyond the Scoreboard, where we uncover the stories behind the stats. In today's episode, we dive deeper into superstitions. First, though, we will be going over the past athletic events at Carroll. For women's soccer, on October 25th, they had a 1-0 win against Northwestern. Then on October 26th, they had a 3-0 win against Evergreen. And then for men's soccer, on the 25th, they had a 3-0 win against Northwestern. Then on the 26th, they had a 3-0 win against Evergreen. For women's volleyball, on October 24th, they had a 2-3 loss against Montana Western. Then on the 26th, they had a 3-1 win against MSU Northern. Now for football, they were in Caldwell this past weekend, and they beat the College of Idaho 43-29.
Let's freaking go.
That was a big win.
College of Idaho.
Yeah. They're like our rivals, right?
No, Rocky is, but still, my rival is College of Idaho.
There you go. We also had some athletes get CCC Players of the Week. The football offensive player of the week was Jack Perka. The football defensive player of the week was Cameron Pruitt. Then the football special teams player of the week was Hunter Peck. For volleyball, the defender of the week was Julia Carr.
Again. And then,
yep, she's gotten it again. And then for the men's soccer offensive player of the week, it was Alfie Snow.
Oh, women's soccer got nothing.
Yeah, they didn't. But now for upcoming Carroll events, on Sunday, November 3rd, women's soccer plays at 1 p.m. against the University of Providence. Then men's soccer follows them at 3.
That's our senior day, too.
Yep. How many seniors do we have?
3, but 5, technically.
With the fifth years?
Yeah.
Okay. And then volleyball plays Friday, November 1st at 7 p.m. against the University of Providence. Football plays Saturday, November 2nd at 1 p.m. against Southern Oregon University. And now we have basketball starting.
Hey.
Men's basketball has a pretty busy schedule this weekend. On November 1st at 3, they play Bushnell University. On the 2nd at 7:30, they play Oregon Tech. And then on the 4th at 7, they play against Arizona Christian University. Women's basketball plays Arizona Christian University on October 31st, Halloween. And yeah.
Today I'm running Allie through a game, and I'm going to name 6 sports, and she's going to rank them but not know what sport comes next. And the ranking is based on, like, just overall enjoyment. So, like, playing, watching, all of the above.
Okay.
So, first sport, hockey.
Ooh. I don't watch hockey at all. And I don't see myself ever playing hockey.
Shoot.
It's 6 sports?
Yeah. 1 through 6.
I'm going to put it at... I do think it's fun to watch, though. Like, in person with the fights.
Yeah.
I think hockey is safe at being at 4.
Okay. I thought you were going to go 6 with it.
No, because there's definitely more boring sports than hockey.
Okay. Speaking of boring, baseball.
Oh, yeah. I don't like baseball. I went to a Cincinnati Reds versus Atlanta Braves game with my dad, and the Braves are his favorite team. Oh, and, cool. Like, the atmosphere is fun, but the game itself is, like, boring.
Yeah, true.
And there's no fights. And there's fights in hockey.
Yeah, hockey, there's so many fights.
Yeah. Probably 5.
Okay. Ooh, leaving 6 open. Okay.
Yep, there's still more boring sports.
All right, the next sport, volleyball.
Volleyball. I like watching volleyball. But it's not my favorite sport to watch.
Okay.
Probably 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
I remember when my sister was still in volleyball, we traveled to WSU and they were playing Stanford. Mm-hmm. And all the girls are like 6'7".
Oh, my gosh.
And it's insane.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next sport, American football.
See, I don't like football that much. I should have put baseball at 6 and football at 5.
Oh,
Because the only time I watch football is if, like, it's on the TV and my dad's watching it, or it's, like, the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Wait, what spots do you have left? You have 1, 2, and 6?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna have to put football at 6.
Oh, okay.
Think. Yeah.
That might be devastating. Wait.
If golf is the next sport, because golf has been in my head this entire time. 2. I'm gonna put football at 2. It's fine.
No. All right. Next one. Water polo.
That's 6. I've never watched it before.
All right. Last sport. Golf.
You screwed me over so bad. Okay, I guess that's 1.
That's so bad.
I was thinking, you know, maybe soccer, since we're soccer players. Maybe you're going to put in, like, tennis, since I played tennis in high school. Because, like, my perfect list would probably be, like, 1, soccer. 2, tennis. I really like watching tennis.
Yeah.
And then it would go, like, volleyball, hockey, football, and then whatever the other one, baseball. Well, and then I just, like, wouldn't count water polo. However, so water polo is impressive.
I actually really wanted to do you dirty, so.
Yeah, it wasn't that nice, but it was okay.
I was like, should I do tennis or soccer? Nah, I'm fine. All right, that concludes my game.
Yep. And now I have a little game. Since tomorrow it's Halloween, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the 30th today. I love Halloween. Halloween's my favorite holiday. So I want you to rank these 5 Halloween activities.
Okay.
Without knowing what comes next.
All right.
So, 1, visiting a pumpkin patch.
Oof. All right. Halloween is not one of my favorite holidays. Just a little disclaimer.
Is it like Christmas?
Yeah.
Okay.
2. No, 3. I'm going to say 3.
Okay. And there's 5.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I'll still say 3.
Okay. Doing a corn maze.
Ooh. I've never done one. That's horrible. Last. 5. I do not want to get lost for fun, no.
Well, there's, like, workers there that make sure you don't end up.
That's
like,
horrible. And then they have scary people. No.
Mm-hmm.
Last. Delete it. I hate it. No.
5. I remember Lewiston had one when I was younger, and I went through it. But there was, like, a little kid's one, and then there was, like, an adult one that actually had, like, the actors.
Yeah, no.
I was probably, like, 8 at the time, so I didn't go in the adult one.
That's terrifying. 5.
Okay. Going into haunted houses.
4. I'm waiting for 1 activity I like.
You sounded so stressed out. You're like,
I'm hoping you say something because I want to put it at 1.
Okay. Carving pumpkins.
Ooh, definitely probably 1.
Yeah.
Like that/painting pumpkins, I feel like is the best thing.
I love carving pumpkins.
I've never done it before.
Really?
Never. I don't even know how to. But it looks fun.
Well, it's not really that hard to learn. You get the pumpkin, and then you take a knife to the pumpkin, and then boom, you carve the pumpkin. I always, like, do this, like, really detailed design mm-hmm. on my pumpkin. And so I'm still sat at the table, like, 2 hours later, and everyone else is, like, done with just their faces.
Oh, my gosh. That's so funny.
But it always turns out well. And if it doesn't, then I'm just, like, pissed.
Oh, gosh.
Like, if my design, like, doesn't work out or, like, a piece falls off, I'm like, oh, my God. Okay, last one. Trick-or-treating.
2, because that's the only thing I have left.
Yeah.
All right.
Is that where you would usually put it?
I would probably put that 1, carving pumpkins, 2.
Yeah.
The rest are fine.
I like trick-or-treating unless it's, like, super cold.
Yeah.
Then it's just miserable.
Yeah. It's usually, like, really hot in Vegas when we go trick-or-treating.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Definitely grew up in a different climate than I did. I remember 1 year it was like raining and it was freezing.
Oh,
I'm
my
like,
gosh.
I'm like, I'm done. I can't.
That's horrible.
I don't care about the full size candy bars anymore. I just want to go home.
We would have to base our costumes on like characters that wore like little clothing. Like we couldn't be like, I don't know, like a Star Wars character that had long sleeves on. Because, like, it would be so hot.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, we would all overheat. And, like, we wouldn't want to wear, like, helmets and stuff like that because it would just be too hot.
Now out to move on to the main topic of discussion, superstitions. So I have like sort of like a definition or like the origin of them or whatever. Most superstitions arose over the course of centuries and are rooted in regional and historical circumstances, such as religious beliefs or the natural environment. For example, geckos are believed to be of medicinal value in many Asian countries, but superstitions can also be based on personal experiences. So the whole thing like, oh, knock on wood, that's like a superstition. Some people wear like lucky socks on certain days or whatever. We were discussing if we had any superstitions before we recorded. Delaney said no, and then she listed off a whole bunch of things that she does before a game.
Yeah, I have superstitions, but I don't call them that because it's more of like, okay, this is going to sound bad, but I like get anxiety if I don't do them.
That's a superstition. That's literally a superstition.
I know, but like, yeah, okay. I don't know. I don't like the idea of superstition because it's like you believe, well, I don't know. I've always thought that like if you're superstitious, you believe that like there's a power of like luck or whatever that can like overpower God. Sorry to bring religion into it, but that's like.
Yeah, I don't really see superstitions as that either.
Like for me, it's more of just routine and mm-hmm. anxiety not doing it.
Like if you don't do it, then like something doesn't feel right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like it's actually going to like physically affect your performance.
But like but I low like, key want to just do it because when I do it, I do good, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm not like, yeah. So mine are like, I wear double socks. So I
you wear double socks?
Yeah, I always wear I didn't socks know that. Under, I do that for practice too, but I like can't play soccer without wearing double socks. So double socks.
I feel like my feet would sweat so bad.
yep. And what else? I always have half of a Celsius before a game.
Why only half? You have like...
Because like too much is overpowering. Makes my heart beat too fast.
There you go.
Think, dude, lately I've been freaking having lotuses before homework, like, and I like can't do homework unless I have a lotus.
That's
like,
not
it's
good.
It's really bad.
That's not good.
That's just like habit. Like,
well, I feel like it's also probably the caffeine that's like affecting you at that point.
Yeah. I used to have like another one where like I would tape my wrist, and I broke that when I came here. And what else? I used to like write on my ankle too, like be aggressive or like something when I was really little.
That's really interesting.
That was a thing for a long time.
Yeah.
And then I always have my cross necklace on. That's like, I mean, I don't know. I just always have it on. And then like I take it off for games, but I always either like tape it on me or ask them to tape it or whatever.
Yeah.
So those are mine.
Yeah. The only thing I'm superstitious about is like our cheers. So in high school, the very first cheer that we would do before a game was just like, Luan 2, 1-2, Lewiston or whatever.
Yeah.
No clap. Then at halftime, we would do the same thing and then add 2 claps at the end. So every single game, the clap had to be at halftime and the non-clap had to be before the game. And I remember one time, one of the girls was like, why don't we just do the clap now? And I was like, no.
Literally,
I'm like, that's not an option. We've done the same thing the entire season. Like, this was a season where we were, like, actually doing good.
Yeah.
Like, if we had a shit season, I don't think I would care that much, but.
You guys are actually winning.
Yeah. Did you see they actually ended up getting, like, 3rd at state?
Really? Higher than Lake City?
It's also 5A, though, and Lake City's still playing against, like, the Boise schools.
Oh, shoot. Sorry. I didn't know.
It's okay.
But. Carol Women's Soccer has a lot of superstitions.
Really?
Yeah. We play a certain song at a certain time. We go and say our goals. We do, like, banging. We freaking...
That's true.
There's a ton of stuff.
I do think that, like, having that routine, like, helps people get into the mindset of, like, playing a game.
Yeah. Because it's like, oh, we're going to do our goals. Okay, I need to lock in now or, mm-hmm. like, whatever. So, certain cheers, too. Oh. 1-2 team on 3 or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
And now that like new song has been added after we do our goals that like Avery exactly. and them sing. And now they do that like every game.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it does, like, help that, like, the vibe in the locker room.
Sorry.
The vibe in the locker room is, like, definitely different on game days. And I think it's those, like, superstitions that help with it.
Yeah.
Apparently, like, Alex Morgan had some superstitions. But, like, hers were, like, sort of crazy. Like,
what?
Left sock on, then right sock on, then left cleat on, then right cleat on.
Oh my
like
gosh.
Certain things like that.
See, I just can't keep up with that. I'm too busy. Like I create them for myself, and then I'm like, bro, like I don't have time.
Well, like I'm always like different. Like I put my shoes on. Like, oh, now I gotta go to the bathroom, and then I have to go and fill my water bottle, and then I have to do this.
Literally, like, I used to have a lot when I was little. I remember my dad had to tie my shoes, even like when I was in like high school. Like I always had to have my dad tie my shoes. But then like. I had to travel, and oh no, dad can't travel and go on the bus with us. And
yeah, that's
shoes.
True.
So I feel like a lot of them have broken because of like traveling and
just like for outside forces that you can't control.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then there's like also like things that people blame like a loss on. So like the Super Bowl could be one of them. I always see how like, oh, that team did this and now they're gonna lose or whatever, and then sometimes they do end up losing and it's like crazy.
Yeah,
I just saw one. So there was a UFC fight last weekend, and one of the fighters was Max Holloway. He was undefeated. He like has been fighting for years, and there's this guy on Instagram that makes like mouth guards for athletes, and some guy commented that like every mouth guard that he makes for an athlete, that athlete then ends up like losing his like boxing match or MMA fight. And Max Holloway got a mouth guard from him, and then he got knocked out for the first time in that fight last weekend.
That's cool.
So
that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. I'm Allie Olson.
And I'm Delaney Moxon.
And thanks for listening to Beyond the Scoreboard. Next episode, we'll be discussing the impact of coaches on players. But until then, keep on exploring the game beyond the numbers.
Following is an interview with Megan Couture, Carroll College graduate and owner of Errant Cellars, a boutique winery in Quincy, Washington. Enjoy.
Thank you for coming in. Appreciate it.
Glad it worked out.
Yeah. So I wanted to first get a sense of your Carroll experience when you came to Carroll and what that experience was like.
Okay. So let's see. I came to Carroll in the fall of 2001, and then graduated in 2005.
Okay.
It was a major in history, minor in theology.
Okay. Awesome. Very good. And where are you from?
So I'm from Central Washington.
Okay. And do you live in the area now?
I'm back in my hometown.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. So what was the decision for you to come to Carroll? Did you have a connection with it before?
Well, my older brother was there.
Okay.
He's just a year ahead of me. But a lot of it was I wanted to go to a Catholic school. I wanted to be far enough away from home that I could be away, but I wanted to be close enough that, you know, if something happened or, you know, I could drive back.
Yes. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So how I'm guessing you're 5 or so hours away, 6?
So it's about 7.5.
Oh, it's further than I thought. Okay.
Yeah, when the weather's nice.
Okay, very good. Okay, well, you can do it in a day. We always have said if you can do it in a day, then you're probably close enough.
Yeah.
It was far enough away to avoid the parent drop-bys, though.
I would. Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Well, I'm older than you. I could have taught you had I started here at Carroll. I started teaching in 2001. But it was at a different school. It was in Texas. So I could have been here when you were here had I started at Carroll. I came in 2008.
Yeah, so. I had one of my best friends at Carroll was in the comm department.
Oh, okay. So. Very good. Well, she probably knows two of my colleagues then, Charlotte and Brent. They're still here. So
I remember both of those names.
Oh, very good. Very good. What are some of the core experiences when you think of Carroll and your connection to it, what comes to mind first?
Oh boy, that's difficult. I loved my college experience. It was a time of a lot of growth and change and being open to just different people, different areas. I'm from a pretty small town. And so it was just really nice to broaden everything. I really liked I liked the academic standards that Carol had. I had a lot of fun too. A lot of great things to do. And it was a fun time.
As a history major, when I got here, Dr. Swartout was in the history department. We overlapped by just a few years, I think.
Okay.
So you probably had him for classes.
Yeah, I did. I really, really enjoyed him as a professor. I had a lot of respect for him, and his classes were always really interesting. He had a wide variety of experience.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think him and Father Sullivan.
Yes, that was another name that didn't meet Father Sullivan. I don't think, but.
Okay, so he was actually my advisor, and he is to this date the most intelligent person I've ever met.
How about that?
Yeah,
that's incredible. A great claim to fame. Yeah,
yeah.
And so, you were history and theology. Did you know in college what you would end up doing? Did you have a sense?
No.
Okay.
No, I had no idea. In fact, I had a lot of meetings with Dr. Swartout about what am I going to do with this degree, and a winery never came up in those discussions.
Very good. And how long was it after graduation that you started the winery?
Okay, so I graduated in 05. I moved around for about 10 years. Did Jesuit Volunteer Corps in Philadelphia, and then worked a few different jobs. Did a lot of traveling. So let's see, I came back to Quincy in 2009. God, I'm losing all track of time. So I guess 2013 was the year I started the.
Okay.
Yeah, 2013.
Very
good. Time flies.
Yeah. How about that? So 2013.
Yeah, so that was the first year I had a vintage to sell. So 2011 was when I started making wine.
We
started the tasting room and everything in 2013.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess there is a little bit of a lead time coming
in.
What was the decision like? I don't know how starting a winery occurs to people.
When I moved back to Quincy, I wasn't really sure. I was kind of in a place where I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. The work I had been doing wasn't really for me anymore. And so there were some people in town starting up a coffee shop, restaurant, and I had a lot of experience working with coffee. So I told them I'd stay for a year or so and help them get going, get off the ground, and thought I'd figure out what I wanted to do from then. And in that time frame, I met the owner of another winery here in the area who was just starting out, and started working for him part-time just for fun because I'd always been really fascinated by wine and wanted to learn more. So yeah, I worked there for a few years. And after a few years, he really encouraged me to go off on my own. He had a lot of faith that I'd be able to do it by myself.
Well, how about that? Because I would imagine I don't know if you think of it as competitors. You probably don't. It's more of a community, I'm guessing.
It really is. The wine industry, at least the one in this area, but I think as a whole, it's a very different kind of, yes, there's some competition, but some of the other winemakers in the area always say that what's good for one of us is good for all of us.
Yeah, I could see that where you kind of a rising tide lifts all the boats. And
yeah, most people don't usually go to one winery. They want to go to a few. So the more of us that are doing well and that are here, it brings more people to the area, especially where we are.
Yeah, that makes sense. What were some of the challenges in starting up?
Oh boy. Let's see. I have said many times that I didn't take any business classes in college, and it is one of the main things in my life I would have gone back and redone.
Okay.
I never thought that I would go into business. It was not something. So the learning curve was pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
And because I was doing it all by myself, I was not only figuring out all the wine side of stuff, but it was all the business stuff, the licenses, the taxes, the accounting, the everything.
Wow.
So it was a big learning curve. It was a lot of work. And I think back on it now sometimes, and it just kind of makes me laugh. But I managed to get through it. And I just really enjoy it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you started out in 2011, and the first vintage you had to sell was 2013. I would imagine that was part of the plan. Like, when you start a winery, I'm guessing you know that there's some lead time before you can get really started.
Yes. So when I started, I knew that it would be at least 18 months till my first wine was ready for sale. That's in the way I make wine, that's a minimum of how long we age reds. In the beginning, I didn't do any whites. In fact, the first year I just made one wine. It was a red blend. It was 32 cases. That was kind of how we got started. But when I was kind of thinking about it, I was having lunch with my grandpa one day, and we were kind of talking, and I told him that this is something I thought I wanted to do, and, you know, be a few years, but I was going to try to save up the money to be able to get started. And he said that, you know, he had some money for my siblings and I for, and I guess, an inheritance. And I kind of made a prodigal son joke, told him I didn't want to take that. And he said he would rather be alive to watch me enjoy it than have me wait till he was gone.
Wow.
So the first wine I made, I named it Henry's Red.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I named it after him.
Okay. That's really cool. Do you still have some bottles of that around?
Always. Yeah. I keep a little bit of everything I've made. There's only been a couple of times I sold out of something without grabbing a case of it. And I kind of kicked myself for those, but they're out there somewhere for others to enjoy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's awesome. What a great story by Grandpa. What great foresight on his part as well.
Yeah, he was a wonderful, wonderful man.
And is your family from the area where you live in Central Washington?
Yes. Yeah. My parents are both from right around here. So I'm in Quincy. My dad was just from the next town.
Okay.
My mom had a lot of family. So I grew up with a lot of cousins, and a lot of them are still around here.
Okay. Did you, this makes me think of experiences that I've had. When you left for college, did you think one day I'm coming back, or did you think one day I'm never coming back, or was it an open question?
I didn't think I would come back, but not in a I'm never going back there way.
Yeah.
It's just the town has really grown and changed pretty dramatically from the time I graduated to in the last, 20 some. And so there's a lot more opportunities here. There was no wineries when I was growing up here. There was not even that many grapes. Hmm. And the ones that were Concord.
Okay.
So the wine industry in Washington State has just really exploded, and it kind of exploded at the right time for me.
Yeah.
Gave a lot more opportunities and chances to get into it. And when I went to college, there was only one program even around here for winemaking, and it was mostly about still the growing side. And then they did change, but I don't even know how many programs there are in the state. Hmm. But that just wasn't an opportunity when I was, I don't know if I would have taken it then. I don't know if I would have thought.
Okay. Tell me about the name of your winery, because it strikes me as super interesting, and how it came about.
Yeah, so the winery is named Errant Cellars, and on the back of the bottles, I have the definition that it means to wander without cause or reason or to stray from the path. So in my adult life, to the point when I named the winery, I did a lot of moving around, a lot of traveling, never stayed put, wasn't ever sure if I would. So that was a big part of why I named it that. Also, I think that the industry and grapes kind of go that way, the way the grapes have moved from Europe to the Americas and the different people who are in and out of the whole wine experience, the vineyard workers, the, processing, everybody. It just kind of felt like everyone has this different paths and come to it in really interesting ways. So it just seemed to fit.
Yeah. What a great way to honor the way you came to something by naming it after it. That's really cool. You mentioned that in starting up, there was a huge learning curve. You talked mostly about the business side, but what about the agriculture side?
Yeah. So because I had worked in the industry for a few years, I had a lot of the basics. And the person I learned from, Pete Beaumont, he was really good at just letting me be in all of it. And so I, you know, learned from mistakes I made. I figured things out. And so a lot of the basics I had. So that part I didn't worry about as much starting out as I did about the whole running a business side of things.
Okay.
Now, over the years, of course, winemaking has a lot of challenges. The weather is different every year. So there's always some fun new things happening as a result of that. And you never really know fully what you're going to get with the grapes till you have them, even down to decisions about when to harvest. There's so many factors and very rare that all the numbers are perfect. So usually you're making these decisions based just kind of on your gut and your experience. But it's one of the things I love about making wine is that it is impossible that I will ever know everything about it. I will never know everything about all the grapes or all the ways to do things or why people do them or the geography and the topography and all the regions. It's impossible. And I love that about it because there's always something new to learn and experiences to have.
Yeah. Do you find that you do a lot of study? Like learning new things, is it a matter of study? Is it a matter of experience? Is it a combination? What does it look like and feel like?
So it's a combination. When I have new issues, especially during harvest time, that's when it's the most. I'll come across something I've never dealt with before. And so I, you know, of course, look on the internet and I have a couple of old textbooks from wine programs that I just bought online. And and then a lot of it is calling the other wineries, the other winemakers that I'm friends with. Hey, this is what I'm dealing with. Have you seen this before? What did you do? Did it work? Did it? And then I keep records of every wine I make, every grape that gets crushed, I keep records so that I can, you know, like if say this year the temperature spiked and I think, oh man, I've never dealt with that. Well, then I go back and look. And yeah, I did. In 2015, the Cab Franc did that same thing. What did I do then?
Mm-hmm.
How did it work?
Okay. And so I'm wondering, because you said that the community there of the wineries has blossomed, has been growing. Where do you find yourself amid that growth? Are you one of the more established wineries now? Or somewhere in the middle, or still one of the newer ones?
So there's seven or eight. I think there's seven still in this general area around Quincy. And I think there's two that are newer than I am. So I'm kind of in the middle.
Okay. Very good. Very good. It sounds like you do have a good community. It reminds me, I'm from a farming community. It's not unlike that, I think, just, you know, the farmers see themselves in some ways that maybe they compete, but mostly they see themselves as in the same boat in a community and they can lean on one another.
Quincy is an agriculture town.
Yeah.
Over the years, as things have changed and we have a lot of data centers now, which has changed the way the community is, but still at its heart, it's agriculture is and all those elements and those pieces that support.
Was the growth of having a winery industry there a surprise to the community, or was it something that people had seen coming in some way?
I think it was a surprise. It happened fairly quickly. You know, it was like there was one for a lot of years, two, they were out in George and people, but even when they were around, the industry just didn't seem as accessible. For a long time, people were afraid of wine. They thought wine was, you know, you had to be highly educated about all the pieces or you had to have some experience they didn't, or that wine was only for wealthy people.
Yeah.
And boutique wineries like mine and like the thousands that are in the state are what has changed that. you know, we're around, people are comfortable. They come in, they ask the questions. They don't feel like, they don't think that they're being stupid by not knowing.
Yeah.
They get to taste all the different things. People come in all the time. They go, I just don't know that I like wine. Like, that's why you go tasting. Yeah. You don't like it, you dump it out. It hurt my feelings. I said, I don't expect everyone that walks in the door to love everything I made. That would be setting myself up for a lot of failure.
Yeah, that makes sense. It does seem like that, actually, now that you say that, the idea of a winery does kind of have that elitist connotation to it. Yeah.
Yeah, historically it did. Yep. So that's changing. But I mean, the whole alcohol industry in this country is same. Beer is doing the same. It's almost gone up.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, where you can be a connoisseur of beer. I don't remember that when I was younger. Maybe I wasn't plugged in, but it does seem like microbrews and breweries and that kind of thing. Yeah, now there's a big thing.
Yeah, now there's these micro distilleries, which are changing the way. So yeah, it's just a really, it's fun how the how the whole alcohol industry is just bringing in new opportunities and allowing people to decide what they like and enjoy things. Yeah. In a different way.
So tell me about your operation. You're pretty lean, I would imagine, being a boutique.
Yeah, for the most part, it's me.
Okay.
I always joke that people come in and say, oh, are you the owner? Yes. Are you the winemaker? Yes. And the tasting room manager and the bookkeeper and the janitor and the repair person.
Yeah.
I have, you know, a group of friends that help with harvest and with bottling, and some people that'll, you know, I have plenty of people that if something happens, something breaks, I can call and they'll be there to help me. But as far as the day to day, it's me.
Yeah. Okay.
My husband helps out when he can, but he has his own, he's a mental health therapist. Mm. So he's got his own business and, they kind of conflict as far as scheduling. So
yeah, I could see that. Are you busier during some times of the year than others? Harvest time, I would imagine, is.
Yeah, it kind of runs in cycles. So fall is harvest, which is the busiest time of the year as far as the winemaking work is concerned. Then winter is kind of slow for everything. It's slower with tourism. It's pretty slow in the cellar. Spring is bottling time. So again, kind of doesn't take nearly, it's just a few weeks of being busy instead of months, mm-hmm. like harvest. And then the summer is just kind of the tourism time. Yeah. So that's when the tasting room is the busiest. And when we try to be open the most and do events and kind of bring people in. And
you do tastings. Is there like a wineries tour, that sort of thing in the area?
There isn't. We kind of formed a loose collective and put together some brochures that have just to let people know how many are in the area. Mm-hmm. And we all kind of take those when we go pour at different events or competitions and stuff, just to help bring people in.
Yeah.
Because like I said, Quincy is still fairly small, but we have the Gorge Amphitheater, which most people know what that is. And that's right here.
Yeah.
And then there's a resort community just to the west of us.
Okay.
Called Crescent Bar. So those bring in a lot of people in the summer.
Where do you see it going?
Right now, the industry is struggling a little bit. It's happened pretty quick. We went through, COVID took about 3 years to work through.
I was going to ask about COVID, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Wineries were like restaurants. We had to be closed in Washington. I think we were closed for 9 weeks or something like that. It's hard to remember anymore. And then there was all these regulations and a lot of them required money to be able to stay open, and I just didn't have the money to put into it. Those were some rough years. And then
it took even longer than that for people to start coming back, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, 2020 wasn't the hardest year, because that was the year when people were like, oh, let's go buy more wine. Let's support
these people that are selling. Yeah.
By 21, everyone was going, oh, this is still going on. Maybe we need to take a step back. Maybe we need to, you know, cut our budget.
Yeah.
So the 21 and 22 were more difficult.
Yeah, I can see that.
And we've been coming out of that. But right now, all the industry newsletters that come out, all the industry emails, the numbers don't look great. California is worse than Washington, but it's a challenge. I don't foresee it being a permanent. I think it's just a, I think it's a phase. Mm-hmm. I think it'll come back up. I think a lot of it is this new group of people who are legally allowed to drink, have different tastes right now. They're drinking all these convenience cocktails that come in a can and those kind of things. And so there's some other factors that have affected it, but I think long-term it's going to be fine. I think we might have a couple of lean years. I wish they weren't so close to the pandemic, but it's a struggle. But I mean, I'm lucky because my husband's business is something entirely different. Mm-hmm. Our financial situation isn't dependent on how well the winery does. And I have a couple of minority business partners that are just incredible. And
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, they came in, gosh, I'm trying to remember, 4 or 5 years ago. And as partners, and they're incredible. They've been so generous and they're always there to be helpful when I need things fixed and to help with the financial end of things.
Yeah, very good. That sounds like a good partnership.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to have found them.
Yeah, yeah. Now, my son graduated from Carroll, 2020, 4 years ago. Okay. And I've seen in him that I didn't have as in my own college experience, that he has made he made a lot of friends in college and has connections from Carroll. Did you have that experience as well?
I did. I still, most of my best friends still now were people I met at Carroll. There's a group of four of us that are kind of all over the country now, and we get together a few times a year.
Oh, wow.
Still, and we used to joke that we grew up together when people are like, oh, how do you know each other? We're like, well, we grew up together because we kind of did.
Yeah.
You know, that 18 to 24, that's a huge time. And it's such so many changes and developments. And it's a big time. And then, but yeah, it's nice. Even I go back to Helena and see some people that are still there. And it's nice to have that network. Carroll, being a smaller school, I think helps with those connections.
Yeah, that's my impression as well.
Yeah, even if you didn't really know someone at the time, you're like, oh, you were there. Oh, yeah.
And you know all the same people. And
Yeah,
I can see that. Yeah, do you make it back to Helena very often?
I haven't. I actually was just, I'm hoping to get out that way this summer.
Okay.
Because I think it's been 5 years.
Okay.
I just can't believe how big it's gotten.
Yeah.
A lot of changes since I was there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. There are quite a few different things that we have now. Yeah. You should come if you have a choice. You should come during, say, around the third weekend of July is Symphony Under the Stars. It's a pretty cool event. Yeah, about 20,000 people come to campus and listen to the Helena Symphony on the Hill.
Yeah, I've seen that. A lot of my friends in the air, they all go.
Oh, yeah. You would see social media posts and stuff.
Yeah. More. So, yeah. No, it always looks like a really great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good community event for sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Very good. Well, I want to thank you again, Megan, for coming in to interview for a few minutes. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I was glad to do it. Thank you for having me.
Again, thank you so much for coming in. Appreciate it. I wish the students could have been here. They would have very much enjoyed talking to you about your business. I bet I didn't ask all of the questions that they would have asked. So,
well, they can always email me or get all, you know, say me. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah,
thank
of course.
You. Have a good day.
You too.
Thanks for tuning in to Big Sky Small World. Theme music is by Alex Coulter. Please follow and leave comments on Instagram at bigskies.smallworld. Tune in next week for more fun and interviews.
In today's episode, we dive deeper into the mental health of athletes. First, we're going to go over the past athletic events at Carroll.
Wait,
You said mental health of athletes. Isn't it superstition?
I didn't change it.